03-1900209, Seton Family Hospitals versus Tamara's White. Ms. Faust, whenever you're ready. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Council. May it please the Court. This morning, Seton Hospital would like to present the Court as probably next favorite area of consideration, and that would be in the context of the Chapter 74 expert report situation.
Blast from the past.
Yes. So, I don't know if you're even seeing as many of these appeals now. The courts have been through just about every aspect of the statute in determining what it means. And we're presenting to you today a little bit different situation here, one that we believe the San Antonio Court of Appeals has considered and provides some guidance, as we've discussed in our brief. So to get started, we believe the trial court abuses discretion in denying our motion to dismiss because the only report that was served that the appellees claim implicates Seton is the report of Dr. Chudnovsky. And in this case, let's go back and consider the petitions that were filed against five healthcare providers and four physicians. It involves a tragic death of a young mother just days after she gave birth. And the claims are alleged medical negligence, of course. The expert report of Dr. Chudnovsky was served timely. It does not address any care provided by Seton Hospital nurses or any of the alleged medical negligence within the plaintiff's petition regarding Seton as a named defendant.
Do the parties agree that Seton's aspect of this is solely vicarious liability?
I believe so, Your Honor. They have not contested that. The report does not address Seton's direct liability allegations. So we believe then there are legions of cases, of course, that talk about what the court needs to look at is within the four corners of the report. However, in this particular context, when the report is silent with respect to Seton, and that's undisputed, then we can look, and the Texas Supreme Court has instructed in the Gardner case that the court may look, and necessarily probably does need to look, at the party's pleadings, the petitions in this case, to determine what the claims are with respect to vicarious liability here. And as we have contended, we don't believe that the pleadings in this case in any way address Seton's vicarious liability for the conduct of Dr. Pittman. Now, if the court looks at what is required to provide fair notice, rules 45 and 47 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure govern what's required of a pleading. And we know that it has to contain a concise statement to give fair notice of the facts. And that's really what's missing here. We have no facts. In fact, the courts have said, and the Texas Supreme Court has said, the key inquiry is whether the opposing party can ascertain from the pleading the nature and basic issues of the controversy and what testimony will be relevant. And when there's a complete absence of even basic information in the petition, the courts will conclude it does not provide sufficient notice to the defendant to even prepare a defense.
No, I know that they argue that essentially you all should have brought a special exception as opposed to this, and it kind of triggers for me. I mean, what would a medical expert have to say about whether vicarious liability exists or not exists? I mean, is that essentially your position, that they need expert testimony on that, and isn't that a legal issue rather than a medical issue?
It can be both, Your Honor, a legal issue. But I've seen many reports where an expert can review policies and procedures, financial information, anything that that an expert has provided, to be able to say, within the information I reviewed, Seton Hospital employs physician groups such as Dr. Pittman to staff its emergency department. That doesn't exist here. That's that is a statement of fact that could be contained within the four corners of the report to shore up the pleading allegations, which are vague and conclusory.
But is
here.
That specialized knowledge that would assist the trier of fact? I mean, can a court look at those issues and determine whether there's agency or vicarious liability?
Within the context of just the report?
Outside the report, within the course of the lawsuit through pleadings and evidence and the traditional means outside the expert report.
Correct, Your Honor, but the statute, neither the statute nor the history of the statute require any special exception. There is really nothing that can be done in the case. Discovery is stayed until the expert report is served. And until the expert report determined to be sufficient to implicate a defendant, the case really begins at that time. And to allow a plaintiff to come in, have a very vague conclusory allegation such as we have here, to then require a defendant healthcare provider who receives a report that addresses two reports. One addresses an obstetrician's care, the other addresses an emergency physician's care, nothing about what the hospital did or didn't do or shouldn't have done, and going back and looking at the pleadings, then the courts will require that the defendant come forward to try to flesh out something through additional filings, finds no support in the statute. And really, what's important is that the legislature has said that the focus and the goal here, we have to save meritorious claims, but we're going to dismiss frivolous ones with the least cost to the defendants, but we're going to preserve those claims that are meritorious.
And let me ask you, so how much specificity would you require? So if they would have just put, you know, Dr. Pittman is in Seton's employee or agent, would that be enough?
Well, let's look at the Gomez case, the Southwest General Hospital versus Gomez case that we've cited to the court. And that was a case involving the physician who is alleged to have performed surgery incorrectly. Reports were served addressing the surgeon, but not the hospital. And the hospital said, you haven't implicated us in those reports. But once they raised that argument, the plaintiffs amended their petitions twice to assert factual allegations of joint enterprise, joint venture, and agency. And they said, quote, that the physician worked directly by and through the defendant and acts as its medical director. So there is an agency relationship through the express factual pleading allegations in that case.
That was said in a pleading, though, not in an expert report.
Correct, in the pleading. And here we have no amended petition. We have vague allegations. In fact, if we look at those, and the court has them, obviously, through our briefing, but just touching on them, they've made the assertion, well, we've pleaded that all defendants are vicariously liable for the conduct of all the other defendants, but that's not even what they say in their petition if the court looks at it. The petitions say that at all relevant times, quote, the healthcare workers treating Ms. Jones during the relevant time period were agents or employees or servants of defendants, capital D defendants, who are named in the lawsuit. They were in the course and scope of their duties for these defendants. Therefore, in addition to the acts of medical negligence, defendants are vicariously liable for the negligence of these healthcare workers. They don't say they're vicariously liable for these defendants, as they've contended in the trial court in here. So their pleading expressly doesn't even say what they say that it says. And the pleadings are identical. And we've cited to those. That's paragraph 19 in the original petition and paragraph 22 in the petition and intervention.
But they do say that Dr. Pittman was working at Seton when this occurred. I mean,
they don't. That's nowhere within the petitions, Your Honor, respectfully.
Okay.
And it's nowhere within the report. And in fact, they sued the emergency physicians of Central Texas and say Dr. Pittman can be served through emergency physicians of Central Texas. One would think if Dr. Pittman was our employee, they would serve Dr. Pittman through us. So I think a fair reading of the petition is that Dr. Pittman is an agent of employees physician of Central Texas.
Could they have two masters? I mean, could Dr. Pittman?
They could, but there's been no allegation of that, no joint enterprise, no factual allegations whatsoever contained in the pleading. And we know also from the Gardner case that it's that the court would necessarily need to go and look at the pleadings here, which are so conclusory and bare. In the Gardner case, though, there were only two defendants, so it was very easy for the court to look at those vicarious liability allegations and say the group, the facility where the surgery was performed, in that case, SADI, S-A-D-I, was vicariously liable for the conduct of the surgeon, Dr. Kessler. They were the only defendants in the case.
Where would you have us draw the line? Because from what I'm hearing is, in that case, there's one provider, one physician. In this case, we have, what is it, five providers, four physicians. Is there a line somewhere in there that you think is okay? I mean, 1-to-1 is fine, 5-to-4 is not. Where would you have us draw the line?
I think it's going to be dependent, Your Honor, on what the petition says about each of the defendants. And when they're just gobbled together in a pleading that says they've all breached, doing the same thing, failing to provide care, they've got to have some specificity within the report to flesh that out.
So I'm going to go back, because the report does say that the patient was treated in Seton, and it does say that Dr. Pittman treated her in Seton. So we're
correct.
Going back to the, you're telling me the petition does not mention that.
Correct.
But the report, which is what y'all are asking and have asked the trial court to throw out, specifically says that Dr. Pittman was treating in Seton. So my question once again is, why is that not enough?
Because it says absolutely nothing about Dr. Pittman's relationship, whether agency or employee or employer relationship, that would give rise to Seton's vicarious liability for Dr. Pittman's care. Dr. Pittman works with a group of emergency physicians who staff the hospital, but there is nothing from these reports for anyone to know that. That's outside this record.
But is that specialized medical knowledge that we need someone to tell us in the form of an expert report?
It's got to be somewhere, Your Honor. It's got to be within the four corners of the report, or it's got to be in the petition. The petition has to guide the court to understand what the report covers. The petition here says that Seton failed in its care and that Seton is responsible for the health care workers who provided care in the course and scope of their employment with Seton. It doesn't say other defendants. Dr. Pittman is a defendant under their petition. Now, to just sum up where the report doesn't set forth any facts, and Chief Justice Rose, we see it all the time in cases where experts come in and rely on facts that are absolutely inaccurate. Once the medical records, and in fact, defendants often say in their objections, this doctor is incorrect in the recitation of the facts, but you can't go to those medical records. You have to take what the doctor says in the report as face value. That's what the court has to look at, even if it's an inaccurate fact. We don't even have inaccurate facts here. We have silence with regard to Dr. Pittman's relationship with Seton, and we don't have a petition that tells the court in what way Dr. Pittman was related to Seton to give rise to liability through her conduct. We would ask the court to reverse the trial court's denial, to dismiss the case with prejudice against Seton, to allow a remand for the trial court to consider the award of reasonable attorney's fees and costs at this time, and also that additionally they're not entitled to cure because of the failure to implicate Seton, so there would be no 30-day period to cure. Without any other questions.
I guess
questions
the only other question I have is, in the grand scheme of things, are they still within a period where they can amend pleadings?
Not with respect to this issue, I don't think, Your Honor.
Because it falls within something that should have been in the expert report.
It should have been. They could have amended their petition after the hearing, before the ruling from the trial court, before this appeal, before the briefing, during the briefing, before today. None of that was done. The we've put them on notice since the day of the hearing about the Gomez case, and in that case where they amended the pleadings.
Thank you, Ms. Faust.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. DeShazza?
Thank you, Your Honor. Please, the court. The complaints that are lodged by the appellants fall, in my view, in two categories. One is that Seton is not implicated in the report. And because it's not implicated in the report is deficient. That's one category. The other category is the pleadings are not sufficient, and the pleadings don't put fair notice. I would argue that only one of those issues is properly here. The issue, and I'll address that first, the issue of whether Seton needs to be implicated by name in the report or its conduct in the report is well settled. This is a vicarious liability case. That is not disputed. In a vicarious liability case, the law is very clear that as long as the conduct of the agent or physician is implicated within the four corners of the report, that is sufficient for a vicarious claim against the hospital or principal.
Can I ask you about N. Ray McAllen Medical Center? I think that the 2008 Supreme Court case where they concluded an expert report was inadequate to claim vicarious liability because they didn't explain how the hospital controlled the details of the physician.
Yeah, I would say that court's that case is a 2008 case. We've had several more pronouncements since then that haven't even mentioned that case. I would say that blurb is in dicta. It's even cited in the appellate's brief way deep. And so I guess what I would say, the controlling cases with regard to this issue on vicarious liability and the sufficiency of the report are Gardner, Certified, EMS, and the Moreno case, which is the latest pronouncement on this issue. And on that, in that case, it's similar to this case. The Moreno case is a baby case involving delivery of a baby, and the expert report states that the physician should have done a C-section, didn't do a C-section, and as a result, the baby was injured. And the hospital defendants in that case alleged that the vicarious pleadings were not enough. And the court, the Moreno court, a couple things. Number one, they didn't look at the pleadings. Okay, they did no pleadings analysis like you hear about in the Gomez case, the fourth court case. That's the first thing. And secondly, in that case, and importantly, the hospital defendants did not concede that they were vicariously liable. So that was an issue. But they did say that was not an issue for that appeal. And I believe that to be true here, in that if there's an issue with regard to pleadings, that this is not the proper vehicle to bring that fight. So on the implication issue, Seton's implicated by virtue of the conduct of the physician. And bear in mind, there is no argument here, and it's not disputed, that the report is sufficient as to Dr. Laura Pittman, who was the emergency room physician who was conducting her business inside the Seton ER. There's no argument that the standard of care is not right, or that it wasn't breached, or that the report doesn't set forth the causation. So as long as that is good and sufficient, the law under Gardner and Certified EMS and Moreno and even Gomez says that that's good for Seton.
Let me ask you before you move on. The setup where the hospital has a separate emergency physicians group that staffs the ER, I assume, has come up in other cases. Are there any cases out there that kind of give us the definitive answer to the question of does the hospital ultimately have vicarious liability as well as the physicians group?
Well, there probably are, but it's not at this stage.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that, Your Honor, is because at this stage, this is a pleading stage. I am barred from doing any discovery. So my knowledge of the employment relationship or the agency relationship between Dr. Laura Pittman and the hospital is compromised to a great degree. I'm not entitled to her employment contract. I'm not entitled to her non-compete. I'm not entitled to any check stubs to who writes her check. I'm not entitled to her chain of command or an organizational chart. I don't get any of that stuff. All I know is that she's practicing medicine within Seton Hospital ER, and she's making the decision not to admit my client to the ER.
I was curious whether those cases might have had experts address that issue or whether that's an issue that's determined by the court after looking at all the things that you just talked about.
Well, that may, whether they're truly an agent or an employee or a borrowed servant, I mean, that is a fact-intensive inquiry, to be sure. There may be experts, and I want to make sure I'm understanding your question, there may be experts that say those things. My law partner probably knows them, that they would say, okay, this is what is indicative of an employment relationship. Is that the question? But at this stage is, here's the expert report. Does this case have merit? And there is no requirement in the statute that an expert opine as to the employment or agency relationship between the physician and the hospital. That's not in the statute, and that's not in any of the cases that have interpreted the statute.
It just seems to me that what you have to overcome is, like, we had a case, Fung, where Dr. Fung was just never mentioned in the expert reports. And that seems to be kind of where Seton is now. They're saying, well, you know, we're just not mentioned at all. So kind of the question is that no report as to that particular defendant?
No, the law is very clear on that. It's very clear. When the claim is vicarious, like it is here, Seton does not have to be mentioned. Their conduct does not have to be mentioned in the report. That's the Gardner case. That's the certified EMS case. And I think Fung was decided just prior to certified EMS. Mm-hmm. And that's also the Moreno case. All those cases hold that very thing. And I believe...
But Seton is mentioned in the report. It's not mentioned as to this is how they would be liable or this is how vicarious, but it's mentioned in the report. I mean, y'all keep on saying, you know, I think that the Fung case didn't even have the name in there. It's clear from the report what Dr. Pittman, the hospital that Dr. Pittman was working at, is Seton.
That's correct.
Okay.
If the issue is it in the report that Dr. Laura Pittman, you know, works for Seton and she's employed by them or whatever, no. That's not in there, but I don't know that. What I do know is that she's a physician and she's practicing in the Seton ER. That's what I do know.
So do you think, I'm going to ask the same question, the other way, do you think it's just enough to say in the report Seton has vicarious liability without anything else?
I don't think you need that. I think what you need and what these cases say is that what you need is, all you need is the statutory requirements for the report met as to the individual actor, the agent. That's the standard of care, the breach, and the causation. And if you have that and you have a vicarious claim pled, that's all you need. So I don't think you even need vicarious liability in the report. Now, do you need vicarious liability pled? Yeah, I think so. And yes, we have done that.
What's your response to Seton's claim that there's just too many parties here? And so we don't know who is liable for what's going on. What's your response to that?
At the time that the motion to dismiss was filed, it's filed on two reports, and the Chinofsky report is the only report that talks about an ER physician, Dr. Laura Pittman, that's working inside of Seton. So the notion that they're having to guess as to who their employee is or who they're being charged with vicarious liability, I don't think that is a persuasive, if you will, because there was only one doctor that was being implicated that was working at Seton at the time that this motion to dismiss was filed. So, moreover, you know, when this motion to dismiss was filed, the only issue in the motion to dismiss is whether Seton was implicated or not. This notion that the pleadings are not sufficient, that they're not fair notice, all of that stuff, that's not within the four corners of the motion to dismiss. And what I would say to that is that as the court's alluded to, and in fact, the Gomez court alluded to this as well. If the defendants, hospital defendants, are confused about what they're liable for or what the vicarious liability allegations are, then the court in Gomez in footnote one says they should file a special exception. So that is the proper mechanism for dealing with an alleged deficiency in pleadings, not a motion to dismiss. And I believe that the court, I mean, we're here this morning in large part talking about not whether Seton was implicated, but we're talking about the sufficiency of pleadings. And we're talking about whether or not an expert report needs to have additional verbiage in it, which explains the employment relationship between the offending doctor and the facility. And I've expressed to you why I believe that that's super problematic, but it's just not required by the statute, and it's not required by the cases. And I think that certified EMS court, the Supreme Court, said it well when it said, to require an expert report for each and every theory would entangle the courts and the parties in collateral fights about intricacies of pleadings rather than the merits of a cause of action. And that's the soul of the issue here. We're talking about whether the pleadings are sufficient enough to put them on notice of vicarious liability. I believe that they are, and I believe they speak for themselves. But be that as it may, that is not the issue in a motion to dismiss on an expert report. The issue on a motion to dismiss on an expert report is whether that report contains the statutory requirements and has merit so that the case can proceed.
Do you think that Gomez stands for the proposition? Ms. Faust argued that the Fourth Court had done exactly what you say we shouldn't do or don't have to do. Do you agree with that?
Do I agree with what? I'm sorry.
That Gomez stands for the proposition that we do look into, you know, notice of vicarious liability.
Not necessarily. In Gomez, the appellates put before the court, they argued that the vicarious liability pleadings were not sufficient. And so the court did an analysis of that and determined that they were. There is no other court that's done that. Not Moreno, not Certified EMS, and not Gardner. And Moreno is probably the most congruent one. And so I think what I would agree with is, in order to avail myself to the proposition that the report is sufficient if it implicates the agent, I need to have a vicarious pleading. Yes, I have to have a vicarious claim in order for that rule to apply. I agree with that. But I do have a vicarious claim. And so with regard to the fair notice, I think it's telling that the Gomez court, when they footnote that the hospital defendants are not clear on what the vicarious allegations are, and they say they should have filed a special exception. So that's where I would part ways with the notion that they would endorse a pleadings review in every case involving a motion to dismiss. Let me end with, unless there's other questions, this is an abuse of discretion case. And not only did the trial court judge not depart from the guiding principles, the trial court judge is in accordance with the guiding principles with the Supreme Court case law that we have three cases cited that we've talked about today and the statutory requirements. And for that reason, the trial court's judgment should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Chazoo. Rebuttal, Ms. Faust.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to address several things. First of all, I didn't see the Moreno case discussed in their brief, but I would like to be able to respond to that. If I missed it, I apologize. But I would like to be able to respond to it after today, if I could, but I don't see it in their brief. Assuming it's the Texas Health versus Moreno that they're talking about. But anyway, the Gardner case is Texas Supreme Court, and the Texas Supreme Court did look at the petition. and did look at the fact that there was one doctor, the surgeon, and one facility sued, and it was no doubt who the vicarious liability allegation went to. The Gomez case, same thing. And in the footnote where it says a special exception can be filed, it didn't say it's required to be filed. And in that case, remember, there were adequate factual allegations that the doctor there was the medical director of the hospital. So we have nice facts alleged in the petition there. They brought up the issue in response to our motion. We filed a motion to dismiss saying, you don't have a report that implicates Seton. They came back and said, well, yes, we do. It's Dr. Chudnovsky because you're vicariously liable. See our petition. That's why we're talking about the petition.
Ms. Fess, can I ask you, though, will you address the point which is without discovery, without them being able to know who the doctor works for, what is a plaintiff supposed to do at this stage of the case?
And the Texas Supreme Court said in the Jordan case, way back in 2010, I believe, it is difficult for a claimant to come forward with little discovery to be able to get an expert report. But that used to be a discretionary call for the courts, the trial courts. Did they make a good faith effort to do what they could? That was the old version of the statute, and the Texas legislature said it doesn't matter any longer. They have to give a report that addresses standard of care breach and proximate cause. And when we say, Your Honor, that the report doesn't mention Seton or doesn't implicate Seton, we mean it doesn't address Seton's standard of care breach. And we do agree. It states that she was received care at Seton. Absolutely. We would not disregard that.
Is there a scenario where someone working in a Seton hospital in the emergency department would not be some sort of employee or under some agency relationship?
Sure, Your Honor. Two cases come to mind. The Baptist versus Sampson case out of the Texas Supreme Court back in the 90s talked about ostensible agency. That's how you get to a hospital being vicariously liable for the conduct of a physician. There has to be a holding out. There has to be facts alleged that the physician held out that it was an agent of the hospital. And that's why we have hospitals that have all the forms that say that the doctors are independent from the hospital now after the Sampson case. Another case, St. Joseph versus Wolf, the borrowed servant doctrine. If you have pleadings that allege that we borrowed your doctor to perform care in our hospital, that's one thing. Then perhaps a borrowed servant doctrine could apply. But we don't have any of that here.
Are there any cases that put those type of issues on the plate of an expert?
Not that I've seen, Your Honor. But I would be happy to look at that and would supplement if we can find anything. Typically what they'll say in these pleadings that we see all the time is that the physician was, they plead factually that the physician, even though it's true or not, was employed by the hospital, or the hospital is responsible for the acts of the physician. So yes, it's difficult to get an expert report when they're not allowed to do discovery, but that is no longer in the discretion of the courts. The legislature says
it's not really within their field of expertise, I would think.
To know what a legal relationship is, correct, but they could state what the facts are that they've reviewed. And then finally, you know, it's outside the record, but Dr. Pittman is not an employee, has never been an employee, and so it's just defies logic that they would non-suit all these other three other defendants, ARA and two doctors, when we filed our motion to dismiss. If their pleading is adequate to impose vicarious liability on everybody, why would they need to non-suit those defendants? Seems like their reports would have been sufficient as to those as well. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Faust. Thank you, Mr. Shazza. Well-argued case. The case will be submitted, and the court will stand in recess.